dann als Untergrund, dass wir euer Programm dort in Indication, so that it can be made available to you. We wish to welcome you all, especially our esteemed visitors. We heartily welcome you to this engagement. I also welcome the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, Western Cape Provincial Legislature, the Honorable Medan. So, Wamgera Plegas, welcome. Well, by way of starting, I want us to introduce ourselves, starting with the National Department, the Provincial Department, as well as the town. General Office and then members of Parliament introduce themselves and then we'll kick start today's program. We'll hand over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you and members of the committee. My name is Itumele Nkotswane. I am the Director General of the Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I am Adolf Hoffman from the National Department of Housing.
Good morning, Chairperson, members. My name is Judy Byatt from the National Department of Housing. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Ahmed Vauda from the National Department of Housing.
Good morning, members. My name is Martin Mapisa from the Department of Human Settlement.
Morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Kaba Kabagambe from the National Department of Human Settlements.
Morning, my name is Clarence Chitereke. I'm from the National Department of Housing.
Good morning, I'm Jeffrey Mahati from the National Home Builders Registration Council.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Maureen Sitchi from the Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Nani Matlati from the Department of National Human Settlement. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, Members. I'm Jackie Sampson from the Provincial Department of Local Government and Housing.
Morning, Chairperson and members. I'm Rob Smith from the Provincial Department of Local Government and Housing.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. I'm David Daniels. I'm the Acting Head of Department of the Department of Local Government and Housing.
Good morning. My name is Mbula Luchanga. I'm from the local, from the Department of Local Government and Housing in the province, Western Cape.
Good morning to members. My name is Andreas Fuli. I'm from the Department of Local Government and Housing Province.
Good morning, Chair and members. I'm Hans Smith, and I'm the Executive Director of Housing for the City of Cape Town.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Ahmed Ibrahim. I'm the City Manager, City of Cape Town.
Good morning. I'm Mike Richardson. I'm the Chief Financial Officer, City of Cape Town.
Good morning. I'm Francis DeWitt, Western Cape Local Government and Housing.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Pramesh Bana from the Auditor General.
Good morning. I'm George Lawrence from the Office of the Auditor General. Thank you very much. We allow members of Parliament to introduce themselves, starting here on my right.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Sarah Manyana, member of the Public Accounts Committee.
Dumela Bagenso,
Lenala ka ke ntse ba le matlabi ke tokola committee.
Good morning. My name is Thapelo Chilwane. I'm a member of the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Morning. I'm Pumzile Ngonya Mavila, the member of this committee.
Chavez, Mike and Masla Mrawaga to the guest.
Good morning. Goedemorgen. My name is Johan Sadeblom. I'm a lid van Skopa.
My name is Joy Ainsley, a member of this committee.
Morning, I'm Ishmael Malale, a member of the National Assembly.
Goedemorgen, Dieter Stetoe, lid van Skopo.
Good morning, my name is Mark Steele, I'm a member of Skopo.
Good morning, my name is Faith Mutambi, a member of Skopo.
Gloria Borman, member of the Portfolio of Human Settlements.
Good morning, I'm Naveen Singh, member of Skopa.
Morning, everyone. Trevor Bonham, member of Skopa.
Good morning to everybody. My name is Butch Stein, a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning. My name is Archibald Finkler, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning. My name is Lorraine Machian, a member of Skopa.
Morning, my name is Mbulelo Ngadana, Chairperson in Skopo, Western Cape.
Good morning, my name is Joe McGlua, member of this portfolio committee and also member of the Independent Democrats.
Goedemorgen, my name is Ben Mutimene, member of the portfolio committee.
Thank you very much. I'm Comrade Temba Goji. I chair this committee. Thank you very much. We are very pleased to have you here, TG. Always a pleasure to be with you. We also welcome the officials from the provincial government in the Western Cape, as well as officials from the city of Cape Town. As you are aware, we are here to look at the performance audit report done by the Auditor General on the N2 Gateway Housing Project. It was a new project, a different project to the ones that we had come to be used to in the country, a pilot project, so to speak, that sought to address the housing challenges in a new way. It was announced here in Parliament by the then State President. It had specific time frames, and with a cost of over 2 billion rand. It was a project that was supposed to have been completed in 6 months, and 4 years down the line, we are still nowhere towards finalization of that project. It was at a cost of about 2.1 billion rand. By some facts, it should be somewhere over 4 billion by now. So, we want to talk to this report, DG. Be allowed to sleep soundly tonight in the knowledge that everything is on track, and of course to have answers on why we had to walk down this road. And
basically to get a sense before we conclude that the project was not managed economically, efficiently, and effectively, if I may take a phrase from the audit report. But as our program indicates, we have Honorable Mashiane to kickstart the process. A slight change which was discussed with her and Comrade Chilwane, it will not only be enabling legislation and policies, but also the question of the management of the project, how and who manage the project, and whatever else happened. So, whilst DG, everything will come through you, but because there were three role players, we believe that whoever bears ultimate responsibility at a particular point, whether it is the provincial department or it is the city of Cape Town, they will have to give us clarity on the questions that will have been posed. I would want to head over to Comrade Mashiane to get us going. Yes, Comrade.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson, and welcome to the department. Chairperson, whilst we are given responsibility of oversight as members of parliament, and the officials are given a responsibility to make sure that implementation takes place without hindrance, implementation takes place without the funds being used irregularly. I have in front of me, Chairperson, two documents. The first document is the report from the Office of the Auditor General. My concentration will be around page 12, 13. And in my possession as well, I have a document which comes from CIPRO, Registration of Companies and Closed Corporations. Therefore, Chairperson, starting by asking the department in terms of the project management to give us light and answers with regards to how some of these irregularities took place. The first one, Chairperson,
or maybe, Comrade Mashiane, if you're going to start there, can I, maybe before you start, just to find out something, just for purpose of a formal confirmation, DG, according to the auditors, it appears that when the project was announced, enabling legislation and policies were not in place. Are they in place now? So that when we go into the meet, I just want, just for purpose of formal and firm confirmation of the status. Is legislation and policies in place now?
Yes, Chair. They are in place.
They are in place. But when the project was announced, there was no legislation, there was no policy in place.
Well, legislation was in place, I think, because this was a pilot, Chair, to pilot the BNG, as it was approved in 2004. We only had a draft policy on social housing at the time. The first component of the project, we should be just
okay.
Phase one.
Okay. No, that's fine. So it was only in draft form at that point.
Yes.
There was no legislation.
It was
for this particular pilot project.
There was no policy, firm policy, particularly on social housing.
Yeah, referring to social housing, because we're dealing with a specific project. So it was to be implemented in 6 months without an approved policy and without proper legislation.
May I clarify something, Chairperson, so that the N2 is constitutes several principles. Joe Slovo Phase 1 is but part
of the bigger pilot project. So that's where the social housing was determined to be built. Those flats that you see as you go up to the airport. That is really a small part of the N2. But on other issues such as informal settlement upgrading and so forth, there are put the way policies in place.
But it was only the Joe Slovo part.
There was no policy. Yes.
So there was no policy for Joe Slovo.
For Joe Slovo phase one, yes. Social housing policy.
But now it's in place.
It is in place, Chair.
Okay. Comrade Mashian, yeah, you can continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question would be, can the DG, and I'm specifically saying the DG, name the company, including its directors, appointed as project manager for the N2 Gateway project?
Chairperson, the company that was appointed by the city at the initial stage, at the beginning of this project was Siberia. It performed the function of...
Okay. No, that's fine. You wanted the name, comrade. Yeah, Siberia.
Chairperson, I said the name of the company, including its directors.
Chair, I would know its directors. It was appointed by the city of Cape Town.
Chairperson, I think we're starting on the wrong footing. If the national DG does not have the full details of the company, it's going to create problems in terms of the further questions that I have to ask. Because my next question was going to be the reasons why the national department was not represented in the evaluation committee. Because in my belief, this project was a project which was inclusive of all three spheres of government, notwithstanding the fact that at that time there was no policy in place, because all of us know the problems that the people were living in the areas which were wet areas were undergoing every year at this time, winter time when it's raining. But please, if you could just assist me by telling us why the national department was not represented.
Chairperson, my information is that the city was the implementing agent. Every sphere of government had a specific role to play in the implementation of the project. The city was the implementing agent, and therefore it appointed Siberia as a project manager. The province was responsible in terms of making sure that funds are available, allocations are done appropriately, and obviously the National Department of Housing overall was responsible to ensure that it also tried to raise additional funding for the project. So hence I say that I will not be able to give members of the committee the names of the shareholders of that company. But what I can confirm is that each sphere of government had a particular responsibility to perform. And it is my belief that each sphere of government did exactly that.
Okay.
Chairperson, I'm not satisfied. Because I believe that for each and every project, especially housing projects, there are steering committees which are being formed. And representation of the steering committees would precisely include, if the national department has got interest in the project, as the ones who will be giving out disbursements in terms of funding of the project, they must have some form of representation, especially in the steering committee, to make sure that, one, the process of evaluating of the tendering companies takes place in a proper manner, but also that value for money in terms of the project itself and how it proceeds should also be a priority for the department, you know. And that is what I'm saying. I'm not really satisfied. And DG, you went back to the first question when I had already moved to the second question. Nevertheless, my third question would be, the reasons for appointing the company, despite the fact that they ranked number 6 in the evaluation committees. Get my question. I'm saying, why was number 6 taken as the company that would be able to undertake the project when there were 5 others who had qualified in terms of rankings?
Well, I want to confirm, Chairperson, that there was a steering committee. The Honourable Member is correct. And we were represented in the steering committee with the province and the city. I wanted to just clarify that. But the appointment of the project manager in the form of Siberia was done by the city. And I would suggest, Chairperson, if you agree that perhaps we get the city's view on the matter, if the Honourable Member is okay with that.
I'll accept the chair.
Yeah, can we get it from the city of Cape Town? Why appoint Siberia, which was number 6 in terms of the points scored?
Chairperson, if you will just allow me to clarify at this point, I think what we have is a situation of the city manager reporting on things that went before. And while I can identify with the question asked, I do not have the answer as to why all 3 spheres of government, for example, weren't represented on the evaluation committee, because those decisions we were not privy to. We were appointed after that. Clearly, the RSP did ask for, in fact, it stipulates that all 3 spheres will be represented. So, Chair, I cannot give you the decision, or where that decision was taken, or whether, in fact, there was such a decision taken to exclude one of the spheres, or whether it was just simply by default.
Chairperson, I agree fully. I agree fully that the municipal manager is a new municipal manager. But I want to believe that in a project as big as the N2 Gateway, the municipal manager should have familiarized himself with the facts of the project, so that when questions are asked, which I think is also your responsibility, looking at the MFMA, so that when questions are asked, like we're doing right now, you should be having answers at the fingertips. But I would request as well, Chairperson, that all those questions which have been unanswered here must be within 2 weeks, be written as answers back to the committee, so that we are able to further evaluate where the problems could have occurred. Now, I don't know if I should proceed with the questions.
Can I do this? I want to check with the city of Cape Town and even with the department. I would imagine that there is documentation for this kind of things. Are we saying that there are no documents that indicate what transpired, when there were meetings, minutes, decisions taken, and all that? Starting in Cape Town.
Chairperson, about this project, firstly, I think the city was removed from this project in February 2006. My appointment took effect on the 1st of June 2006, so it really went before. I think the city also did an investigation, forensic investigation, which documents and reports was handed to the Auditor General to complete the exercise. So all the documentation was handed to the Auditor General's office.
Well, I hear you. Well, you are introducing another dimension, that the city was removed from the project. I think that's another interesting point. But what I'm saying is that from the documents that you handed over to the Auditor General, was there no information indicating to the process for appointing the project manager? Because what the committee is looking for is, why was it that Siberia, which was number six, was given the task to manage the project over and above number one, number two, number three, number four, and number five?
Listen, I find myself in a difficult position. I actually want to agree with the member that those information, if it hadn't been handed over to the Auditor General, I can certainly try and locate that and make sure that we give the answers, certainly in a cooperative spirit. I will do that.
All right. Let's check with the National Department and also the province. Why? Now, see, DG, you said the appointment of Siberia was done by the municipality. Are you still standing by that statement?
Yes, I'm informed that the Goods and Services Committee of the city is the one that made recommendations, and I'm sure the municipal manager can just look at the records of Goods and Services Committee to the council on this matter. But this is my information, Chairperson.
What was the responsibility of the steering committee? I'm not very clear about these processes, but you spoke of a steering committee that would have involved the municipality, the province, and national. Did it have no role in the appointment of the project manager? Use the other one.
The steering committee did have an oversight role completely, but in the particular instance, the agent that was going to enter into the contract was the city. So the steering committee had appointed an evaluation committee, which had evaluated, and that's the point being made by the honourable member, that how come the decision by the evaluation committee had been moved. In that instance, the steering committee members, which was made up including of the city of Cape Town and provincial members, had concluded that the Goods and Services Committee had made a decision, had articulated the basis of their decision, and in that sense the contracting agent was going to be the city of Cape Town. So it was left to the city of Cape Town at that point to conclude that, while there was wider oversight over this process. Under the circumstances, that's what had happened.
Okay. Before I revert to members, can I check with the province, and I also want to check with the AG, the documents that they've seen. What are they telling us? Is there anything we can get from the province?
Okay, thank you. My advice also is that the approach the province follows is to allow the municipality to use its supply chain processes. And that's what happened in this case.
Okay.
Chairperson, can I be allowed to finish before members come?
All right. Just pin the point down, because I suppose they wanted to talk to this question of the appointment of the project manager. But then we finish. Continue.
I was pointing out, Chairperson, that the answers we get in here are not really satisfactory. The next question would be the reasons why the project management fee exceeded the industry norm. Did you get it?
Chairperson, my information is that when this project was conceptualized, the scope of the project in its totality was rather bigger than what was initially thought of, that is, at the implementation level, when it was being implemented. And obviously, even in the private sector, I'm sure they'll have asked for more, just on project management. compared to what the city paid the company that was doing the job, purely on the basis of the scope. You recall that initially, Chairperson, Precinct 1, there were some proposals in terms of densifications and so forth. But because there was this issue that we needed to look at the social housing and try to pilot social housing, so that made the plans that were available to be amended, and thereby somewhat increase the scope. That's really the information that I have, Chairperson, that indeed purely from project management point of view, we needed more than 100 million rand just to project manage a project of this magnitude.
Okay. All right. Yes, continue,
Chairperson, does that really mean that that is the reason why number 6 was chosen instead of number 1? Because if number 6 is given the deal, I'm calling it a deal because it's got irregularities. If number 6 is given the deal, why was number 1 not considered? And the realization of the shortfall being done at that level where number 1 has got the project. Isn't there anything sinister in this whole deal, in this whole project, which took place in terms of policies and regulations, in terms of the MFFA not being properly followed to the letter? But I would also move, Chairperson, looking at the current project manager, information that we will need, the name of the current project manager. Why, can you write down, PG? Why a tender process was not followed in the appointment of the current project manager, which is more or less the same question which prevails in the previous project manager. Cape Town, also write down. How was it ensured that they have...
Let's do this. Let's check if they are answers. Otherwise, it will not serve any purpose for them to come here and say they will come with answers after 2 weeks. Let's get responses and evaluate those responses to the questions around the new project managers or the new project management company.
Chairperson, the current project management company is Tubelisha. Maybe I should just get to how it was appointed. Just to indicate that Tubelisha is Section 21 company. It's a government company. That accounts the Department of Human Settlement, the former Department of Housing. It's a company that has been doing work, appointed by provinces across the country to do work on block projects, slow-running projects, or slow-moving projects, and rectification and so forth. A decision was taken, Chairperson, in 2006 by the MINMEC to say that in the light of the fact that we do have this company that is doing project management across the country, which is a state company, that it be enlisted, its services be enlisted to project manage the N2. It is on the basis of that Tubelisha was enlisted.
Okay.
Second one was why the tender process was not followed in the appointment of Tubelisha.
Well, Chair, I think this is an issue that we had the lengthy discussions with the Auditor General's office about. We moved from the premises that it's a state company that has been doing some work, and that ordinarily we form state companies to perform a particular function, to close a particular gap in the market. Otherwise, you don't have to form a state company. You may then as well use all the private sector companies that are there. Auditor General's office have a different view of which we respect. And we undertook to regularize the process. because although we have different views, obviously they are stands, and we have undertaken to regularize that chairperson. But our understanding, there was no malice from our side. It was purely to say that this is a state company that is there to perform a particular function, and therefore its service is being listed to help.
Okay. Yes, complete.
Chairperson, it looks like there was no contract between the National Department of Housing and the project manager. How so? Why was it like that?
May I just give a little bit of a history there, Chairperson, before I answer your question, if you allow?
I'll be very reluctant. Just give the answer first.
Well, there was a contract between the province and Tbilisi. The history behind Chairperson has got to do with the fact that at a particular stage, the city manager is correct. The city, as an implementing agent, it decided to withdraw from the project, and then that really that's where the decision to ask Tbilisi to enter into an agreement with the province to implement the project was taken. I thought I needed to do that because otherwise the question would be why the contract was not with the city. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
I'm being misread here. I'm not talking about why the contract was not with the city. The issue here, as pointed out by the Auditor General, is that there was no contract. I want to believe that, Chairperson, for every project that takes place, whether at municipality level or provincial or national, even if the company has been giving services to whatever department or sphere of government, in terms of each and every contract or deal that comes to the table, there's got to be a new contract coming out in order to ascertain that if it's around policies which are supposed to be undertaken, there must be an agreement between the service provider and that sphere of government to make sure that there are no comebacks in terms of the project. In the event something goes wrong and you don't want to pay, they'll take you to court. But how are you going to take them? Are they going to take you to court if they don't have a contract with you on that specific project? But I want to rest my case here, Chairperson, and allow other members to proceed with other questions. Thank you, DJ.
Right. So there is no dispute that there was no contract between Tbilisi and the implementing agents, which in this particular case was the province, in relation to this specific project?
Well, Chair, I am advised that from the province that there is a contract. What was not available was a business plan.
I see. Okay. This specific issue around project management. Let me see who. Honorable Singh, Honorable Du Bois. Okay. Let me start with Singh.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, in the last 20 minutes, I just want to surmise that this is a classic case of cooperative governance all gone wrong. Because we're really not getting answers. The answer to the question that Comrade Mashiana posed about Siberia, I mean, surely somebody must give us an answer. We, as members of this committee, have spent hours reading this report. We've spent hours listening to the Office of the Auditor General, getting a briefing. Surely these three spheres of government received this report in good time, and I would like to think that they all met as a collective before coming here, and they will have answers to these questions. I mean, the questions that Comrade Mashiana is asking is nothing new. It's things that I identified in the report. And we are not here to wait for answers for 2 weeks and 4 weeks from now. We should have been given these answers now. In fact, they should have been carrying thick files, walking into this meeting here with all the answers available to us. I mean, did they meet before this to discuss this Auditor General's report?
And I think the bottom line is, did politics play any part in this project?
Right, let me check, Honorable Detroit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I read this report the first time, I thought, I wonder if anything can go further wrong than this. What I get from this this first batch of questions is that either the people sitting on the other side has not prepared this, or they sit on all the information and they're just hoping we're not asking the right or, in their view, the wrong question. Now, a substantial amount of money has been lost. You could say it's wasteful and fruitless and unauthorized. But I want to know from all three spheres of government if anyone has taken responsibility for this mess up to this point. In any of the three spheres of government, has anybody taken responsibility? Has anybody been disciplined? Has anybody been pointed out? There's a question here of a decision was taken. For instance, the city. Was the city removed or did they withdraw? I've heard removed and withdraw. I think from the city I heard removed. And from the director general I heard they've withdrawn. Now, who takes these decisions? Right through this whole report there is decisions. Decisions have been taken, but nobody tells us who's taken this decision. And also the fact that the steering committee, when did the city get off the steering committee? We're not getting the answers. Okay. I want to know, has anybody taken responsibility so far for this mess?
Let's do this, Honorable Stewart. Can you park that question and we'll make it the last question of the hearing? I want input that are directly related to the question of the project management. Honorable Shilwan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is to check, because the DJ is saying when Honorable Mashiani asked about the contract between the three spheres of government and the project manager, and then he said there's a business plan. Chair, I just want to check with the DG that the business plan is an intervention in terms of the recommendations made by the Auditor General. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'm asking on the issue of a contract being given to people that have position 6. While listening to the reasons given or excuses given, the first one is documents are already taken to the Auditor General, therefore I don't have the information why number 6 was given the project. Another one says, it's not us, it's the city. Let the city explain why number 6 was given the project. Now, the question around this is, don't we have a reporting mechanism? Whether the work is done by A, B, or C, after all, I believe the report has to reach the highest office that is dealing with human settlements. So there is no excuse that the DG or DDG can be saying, don't ask me, ask them. I believe that you should be having such a report and knowing what is going on. So I support what the Honorable Member has already said. We need the answer. Why was Position 6 given the project, not 1? We need that answer now from the people responsible. Thank you, Chief.
Honorable Mangan.
Chairperson, I wanted to say what Honorable Matlani has said, but on top of that, I'm trying to find out myself about what the municipal manager was telling us to say, that all the papers were taken for auditing and forensic, that is forensic auditing to the Auditor General's office. My question is,
before that. I believe that when we take papers to the Auditor General, after they've worked with everything, they do bring those papers back to us, so that when they give us their report, we'll be able to go through that and give them the correct answers. Now my question is, didn't the City Council of Cape Town receive back those papers from the Auditor General? Thank you.
Yeah, maybe let me check with the Auditor General's office. In the documents that you've gone through, what was the, how did the appointment process go that ultimately landed Siberia the contract to manage the project?
Thank you, Chief. First, I can confirm that the City of Cape Town commissioned a forensic investigation to investigate this whole process. But because
wait,
of the
wait a minute, the City of Cape Town, which awarded the contract to Siberia, instituted an investigation on why Siberia was awarded the contract.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, continue.
But because of a lack of documentation and because of the lack of reconciliation of the parole players involved to remember exactly why certain decisions were taken, that investigation was inconclusive on this specific matter. So that investigation was not conducted by our office. It was conducted by an independent outside organization.
But who, in terms of the documents that have gone through, who appointed Siberia? How was the appointment done? Because if you say the City of Cape Town did an investigation, but it was inconclusive because they could not get responses from other role players, and yet they are supposed to have been the people who appointed them. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Okay, the evaluation committee did the evaluation of the tenders received, and based on their scoring, Siberia came out number 6. Then they submitted that information to the Good Services and Property Advisory Board. Now, they did a recalculation of the scores. And although they were not, they had no other powers than advisory powers, they in the end recommended Siberia to be appointed. And then, based on that recommendation, the Supply Chain Management Committee awarded the contract to Siberia.
But who had the powers to appoint the management company? The Bid and Evaluation Committee that did the actual work. Now, who was supposed to give the final stamp of approval for implementation?
If I recall correctly, that was the City Manager of Cape Town in the end that needed to make the final call.
But ultimately, it was the advisory board.
No, the goods service after Supply Chain Management Committee made the final call.
All right. Comment to Bijan?
Chairperson, Chairperson, a point of order. I mean, you are overseeing me all the time here.
Yeah, no, I was about to tell you that those are not members of SCOPA, just cool it. If we have time at the end, we'll allow you to ask questions.
No, Chairperson, you said you're going to give chance to members.
Yeah, no. Members of SCOPA. That's how it has been all these years.
So then you must say members of SCOPA.
I suppose those who know our processes understand. If you don't,
well, there are those who don't know why.
I didn't know there are people who don't know. Now you know. When I say members, I'm referring to members of SCOPA.
Thanks, Chairperson. The memorandum of understanding that was entered into among the three spheres of government on point 8.2, Chairperson, it reads as follows: the city, as the contracting party, is responsible for procurement, in relation to the project. Therefore, Chairperson, under that, I wanted us to record that the city of Cape Town should then deal with this issue of procurement very loud and clear in terms of this. But secondly, Chairperson, if both the city of Cape Town and the Director General can produce to this committee, as alleged by the city of Cape Town that in 2006, they were removed from the project. And then also, Director General alleged that, using a different wording to that, can they give us a proof? Because you can't, when you enter the Memorandum of Understanding, come in between willy-nilly, just remove somebody as you would want. Can they give us a proof of that effect so that we prove ourselves, we satisfied ourselves that everything was done properly? But the city of Cape Town should deal with this thing of procurement. Very clear. There's no way the city manager can sit here and tell us here today that by that particular time, when the authority signed this memorandum of understanding on the 14th of February 2005, he was not in the office. It's immaterial. When you assume office, you take over the responsibility, obligations and everything, the shortfalls, knowing that he's going to appear in this committee today. It becomes immaterial to come and tell this committee that I wasn't there. Tell us what happened with this project. It's your responsibility. Thanks, Chair.
Right, I want us to pass this one, but let me give Honorable Stephen Singh, and then we need to get responses. I think that, as Singh indicated, we need to get a sense that people prepared when they came here. Because to come and just tell us we don't know, I was not there or this and that, certainly it's not impressive.
Thank you, Chair. Can I proceed? Yes. I'm still on the award of the project management to Siberia and later to Alicia. The process of removing Siberia and then their replacement by Tbilisi. Could I know whether there was any, what was that process? Was there any evaluation of Siberia conducted as a project manager? Was the decision to remove them based on an evaluation? What were the findings of that evaluation? And if they were found to be defective such that they could be removed, was anybody held accountable?
Chairperson Yang, earlier on I asked the pointed question, did politics play any part in the failure of this project? And the reason I asked this question is, before 2006, the city of Cape Town had a different political masters in control. After 2006, somebody else came in charge. So when we say city of Cape Town, although I accept that the administrator has responsibility for pre and post, I think we've got to bear in mind that the investigation into Siberia took place when a new political masters came in place, and the appointment took place before 2006 when there was somebody else. And that is material to this whole argument, and we need answers here.
Yeah, I think maybe what to cover that angle is to clarify the position of the city of Cape Town. You said they withdrew. I think they used another word that indicated or not from their side. And in terms of the memorandum of understanding, the city of Cape Town was supposed to see to implementation, and they appointed the project manager. But in relation to Tbilisi, I see that the decision was taken by politicians at Min McLevel. What were the arrangements after the city of Cape Town withdrew? I'll use the word withdrew until we have the facts. and what happened. So I'm looking at the what is this act now? The Social Housing Act. Oh, okay, 2008, which still talks to the role and responsibilities of local municipalities, that they remain the implementing agents, so to speak. So what is it about the city of Cape Town withdrawing or not withdrawing, and why was the decision? Or after they withdrew, who then became the implementing agents? I see that Tumelisha was appointed as a result of a decision taken at ministerial level. How consistent, how appropriate was that?
Well, Chair, the pilot project was a product of the city of Cape Town, which asked the province for money. That is the initial stage. The province said, we don't have money, let's go to national. It ended up in the Minmec. Unfortunately, I was the MEC then. I was in the meeting as the MEC then, where we were discussing this project. And it was at that time when we were discussing the BNG, approving the BNG policy. A decision was taken that this project must go to cabinet. And after cabinet, we recommended as the Minmec, that the Minmec recommended that it goes to cabinet, but that there has got to be a memorandum of understanding amongst three spheres of government, with clearly defined powers and functions and so forth, with the steering committee of the officials at the political level, with both the mayor, the minister, and the MSC providing that political oversight on behalf of the Minmec, because the Minmec adopted this project. Now, the Minmec even went further to say that we should be, National Department of Housing must talk to Treasury to reinvest some money for this pilot project. That is, instead of having provincial budgets growing.
Just zoom in on the question.
Well, I'm going to do that, Chairperson.
No, I hear that background, but the crux of the question is, was the city of Cape Town pulled out or did it withdraw, and what became the operational arrangement after it pulled out? I think that's the core of the question.
Chair, okay, yeah, let me just go into the question then, Chair. What happened is that after municipal elections in 2006, there were issues around the project itself, and the leadership tended to communicate it that they are not interested in the project. Issues of corruption and so forth were raised. There were challenges of having political meeting, for instance, Minister, MEC, and the mayor. So there were issues around the. So I wanted to avoid that political atmosphere, because we are now working closely with the city to try to rectify the matters. But there was a mud which affected the functioning of the project itself. So when the city then elected to have that posture, then the Minmec said, okay, let them go. So really, that's really what happened, Chairperson, and then Tibetisha was there for us to take over. So that was more of a political challenge than an administrative challenge. But of course, that itself had a bearing also in the functioning of the steering committee going forward.
Okay. All right.
I hope I covered broad enough, Chair.
I think that, Shulan, that does clarify the city of Cape Town vis-a-vis the process, because it was a grey area.
Chairperson, thank you. You know, as you listen, we were trying to seek some answers from the department. But as you go on, they go on giving us answers. They keep on revealing some other things that we didn't ask for. So it seems as if the three spheres of government sitting that other side
they didn't meet before they came to us, because we're not getting the direct answers that we're supposed to get. For an example, Chair, I ask a question. The business plan was an intervention in terms of the recommendation by the Auditor General. No answer. I'm speaking for me. I don't know some other members. Thanks, Chairperson.
Comrade Mashiani, no, the business plan was not, Comrade Chulwan, the business plan was not as a result of the intervention of the AG. It is something that if you have a project, you need to have. But of course, the project started without a business plan or an approved business plan. Comrade Mashiani? And then we'll then have to move to the next area of focus.
Sorry, on the point of order, my question hasn't been answered either.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Respecting Honorable Steele on getting his answers around this thing. I have a problem, Chairperson. My problem is the date on which this report was made available. If it is correct that it was June 2008, what I'm reading at what is written here. Maybe the Auditor General's office will confirm. But the answers that we're getting here are not answers, actually. It seems like there's a lot of excuses. Now, I wanted to make a proposal. I wanted to make a proposal that says they must all go back and go and do their homework and come back with answers. Because in terms of all the answers that I asked, deliberately, I left them to roll, trying to indicate to yourselves that you are not answering us. Now, they must go back, get us answers, and come back. Also very interesting is the DG was an MEC when some of these decisions were taken. But in the beginning, he should have pointed it out that some of these decisions were taken by the MINMEC. Now, it's very and highly disheartening to have officials here in front of us and not give us answers. Thank you, Chair.
Did you, can we come back to the question asked by Honorable Steele and I thought to be done it was more of a comment, but anyway, let's, and also what Comrade Tobijan raised.
Well, if I understood the question, Chairperson, was the about the appointment of Tubelisha after Siberia. I thought I did answer the question to say that the...
Okay. No, Chair, I'm looking for how Siberia was removed. Was it evaluated? Was there an evaluation? And if it was found wanting, was anybody found accountable for that?
I've advised the person that it was a fixed-term contract, but there were also challenges of performance of Siberia at that stage when it was removed.
Sorry, Chair. Challenges? Do we have some detail?
I did talk about the scope of the project, Chairperson, and indicated that at the initial stage, there was no clarity about the scope of the project when a project manager was appointed. In the process, when the scope became clear in the implementation of the project, the city felt it, that it is not moving as fast as possible, as it was expected. The reason being that, Chairperson, among others, the land issues were not, some portions of land were not yet at that stage made available. There were challenges around the land issue. There were also challenges of getting additional funding at that stage.
Now maybe let's not go into those elements because they are still coming. I would advise that whilst there is a great deal of dissatisfaction on this side in terms of you know, explaining how things rolled out. I would say let's persevere with the process and see how it goes. What is clear, though, is that Siberia was appointed by the city of Cape Town. That's what is clear. Now, the city of Cape Town, after 2006, itself tried to do an investigation on how Siberia got appointed, and they could not conclude that because they could not get the necessary cooperation from role players and they could not get documentation. I think that is the long and the short of what they had transpired in Siberia, and I think it should not even have taken us 5 minutes. That's the information that should have come right from the beginning. That insofar as Siberia's appointment is concerned, this is what happened. I think that is where the challenges that Siberia later had about capacity and whatnot, from where I'm standing and understanding the processes that are happening and being part of this country, clearly those people were given a contract with a full understanding that they have no capacity whatsoever. That's why even the evaluation and bid committee gave them position 6. But somebody somehow went ahead and gave them the contract. And the question is, who is that person? And I think that is what the city of Cape Town tried to find and could not get anywhere because there was no documentation, there was no cooperation. I think that is how the Siberia issue comes into the picture, if my understanding of facts is correct. The other issues, I would want that maybe let's allow Comrade Ainsley and Tobijan
Comrade Chair, I think I've just been instructed to leave, but I'll stay for a while.
Yeah,
Comrade Chair,
I wanted to talk to you as the convener of the study group, that surely it can be done better than this, really.
I'll pass that on to my whip who's sitting right next to me.
Okay.
Comrade Chair, I hope I have more luck than Comrade Mashiani in the responses she's received. So I'm going to keep my answers require yes, full stop, no, full stop, then a very brief response to who, and a brief response to what. Comrade Chair, you see, I think if we analyze the responses we've got today, we are encountering three basic, very serious problems with this project. One is poor governance, and that's emerged from our responses so far. Two, contraventions of the Housing Act, and non-compliance policy. And like Mr. De Toy, who spoke earlier on, I want to know who is responsible for this, and what action has been taken against that person or those people. It's very simple. Let me give you an example now of the steering committee. Chair, the steering committee was established to direct, manage, and supervise the project manager. Now, the DG says earlier on there was a steering committee. He's being a little ingenious, because what he doesn't tell us is that steering committee ceased to function, had no more meetings after the 10th of May. And so my very first question I want to know is, who was responsible for convening that steering committee? Why did it not meet? And what took the place of that steering committee? What directed and managed and supervised this project in the absence of that steering committee? And it would seem to me, reading the Auditor General's report, that that project did not have a steering committee functioning for possibly at least 18 months, 2 years. So if the DG, whoever can, perhaps just answer that. And then when finally, once again, did the steering committee meet? Was it because it had been prodded by the investigations on the part of the Auditor General? Would they still not be meeting today, in fact, if it wasn't for an impending report of the Auditor General? So I would like to know, Chair, who's responsible for this thing not being convened? What disciplinary action is being taken against that person? What person or body steered this project in the absence of this non-functioning steering committee?
Chair, the steering committee has been meeting in the absence of the city. It's convened by Mr. Osman here from the National Department of Housing. The only difference here is that as of after municipal elections, when the city left, the steering committee, they were not part, they could not play any role anymore in the steering committee. That's the only difference.
No, but why was it not meeting? I mean, why was it not meeting? When did it resume meetings? And who or what managed this vitally important project when there was no steering committee to guide it?
So I think what we need to understand that the steering committee was constituted in terms of the MOU. It met on a very regular basis. Subsequently to the city not being part of the Entry Gateway, there were issues around the meetings of the Steercom. But there were lots of meetings that were taking place.
What were the issues? So there were issues around meetings. What does that mean?
No, I mean, the constitution of the steering committee, when city no longer played a part in the steering committee, that is effectively when
the steering committee ceased to meet. That's the long and the short of what
it ceased to meet in the form that it was meeting previously. But there were lots of engagements with province, national, as well as the
but
executive authority.
What you're not saying is when the city of Cape Town withdrew,
yes,
did the remaining constituents continue to meet? That is the province and national.
Yes,
you're quite right on that. You're quite right on that question. There are one or two members who are absent here today, but the proceedings continue. And so, if the city wasn't part of that steering committee, things should have continued.
Yes, it did continue.
Well, Chair, somebody's wrong and somebody's right, because it's quite clear on page 7 of the Auditor General's report. He says here that the steering committee stopped meeting after the 10th of May. Stopped. Doesn't talk about occasional meetings. Doesn't talk about the composition. Simply says stopped meeting. Now, when did it resume meetings?
In terms of the engagement with province and national, those engagements continued on a very regular basis.
Let's use the same word, meeting. Did you have regular meetings? But you said after the city of Cape Town withdrew, there were issues with meetings. And I wanted to know, what were the issues?
These were issues relative to the project.
So you are saying that what is in the report is incorrect. I think that's the long and the short of it. The meetings never stopped. You continued on the regular basis as you used to do before.
Absolutely.
So that statement is wrong.
Yes.
Are there minutes of those meetings? Can we have those minutes?
Just a minute. Let's check with the Auditor General's office.
Yep. I think on page 7... what we have said in paragraph 6.2.1c was that the formal Steercom meetings ceased to exist after 10 May 2006. In fact, that is confirmed by the department because they concede in 6.23b that subsequently the Steercom has been resuscitated. Now, I think what the colleague from the former Department of Housing is saying is simply that there was regular meetings, and there may have well been regular meetings between the department and the provincial administration, but we didn't constitute that as being the Steercom meetings. There may have been dialogue on common matters, but it was not part of the Steercom, for which we don't have minutes of those Steercom meetings since 10th of May 2006. Thanks, Chair.
I think that's why I used the word engagement and not meetings.
No, but that isn't a formal meeting, Chair. You and I engage quite on a regular basis. That isn't a formal meeting. We don't take minutes. We don't document things. And what is important when one is analyzing these projects is an analysis of the minutes and what kind of meetings took place. And clearly, there's none of those. Meeting in the corridor occasionally over a cup of tea at a conference does not constitute a meeting of the steering committee.
Yeah, continue.
Okay, then also in terms of this, what I like about the Auditor General's report is that it highlights the problem, then it makes a recommendation, and then it then elicits a response from the appropriate structure, department or whatever. And that is the format they've followed in this report, and the report we'll be dealing with tomorrow. Now, in this report, they make three recommendations. I'm not going to go through all those three recommendations, but you respond very positively to two of the recommendations made by the Office of the Auditor General. But one you don't respond to, and I'm hoping you'll give a response to that one today. The one you don't respond to is the recommendation on the part of the Auditor General to revisit the Memorandum of Understanding and make necessary adjustments to that memorandum to ensure that roles and responsibilities are clearly defined. Now, you don't respond to that, or at least you haven't in the report that I've got. Perhaps you could respond now. Because one of the problems, Chairperson, is that the Memorandum of Understanding was very, very badly drafted. Very badly drafted. It did not define properly the roles and responsibilities of the various role players in this project. So if you could perhaps, A, respond to the recommendation of the Auditor General, and B, tell us again, who's responsible for drawing up this Memorandum of Understanding, which was completely ineffective, and what action has been taken against that person?
Chair, yes, we did not respond at the time, but I can confirm that there is work that has been done to revisit the Memorandum of Understanding within the context of IGR, Intergovernmental Relations Act. So a protocol has been drafted, and we are continuing to meet as three spheres of government to discuss. There is somebody who has been tasked with the responsibility to develop that.
But did you, 12 months after the report came out, you are still discussing? Is there any time frame within which this will be finalized?
Chair, the time frame is that, just let me just confirm. That will be 2 months from now, Chairperson. I would like Chairperson to really urge the Chairperson, the members, to understand that as officials that try to deal with the situation, that does not necessarily reside within our sphere of control. And I can only confirm that thus far, in fact, relations are beginning to mature and a memorandum of understanding has been developed. And the MNC of the province is actually taking this role very seriously. So I would like to comment further, but
he... You see, on page 7, 6.2.3b, says that the steering committee has been resuscitated, in which officials of all the three spheres of government participate. Now, if this was your response prior to June 2008, now, what becomes the base of your engagement if there is no memorandum of understanding? And 12 months down the line, you have not been able to agree on anything.
I'll ask my colleagues from the province to assist on that one, Chair. But,
Chairperson, just to follow on your question, you know, the DG said this thing is not entirely under their control, this project. Now, this project is costing the taxpayer billions. We want people on the ground to benefit from this project. It's a good project. It's got good vision, good everything. Who controls this project? If it's politicians, then we must call those politicians here at Scopa. and ask them what they're doing about this to make it work.
I think, Chair, the problem we are facing here is inconsistency in giving answers. But linked to the question, the DG highlighted the withdrawal in 2006 of the city of Cape Town, and he said largely that was due to the political issues as opposed to administrative issues. So linked to the question now, because this report is June 2008, what is the status quo now, seeing that, again, the same scenario of political dynamics have changed? What is happening now?
The project is continuing. It's been implemented. A protocol has been drafted. We have a draft. It will be completed next month. That's the status, Chairperson. But it is being implemented according to business plan that was approved last year.
Yeah, of course my concern was that the steering committee was resuscitated before June 2008, and up to now, 12 months down the line, the steering committee, is it meeting?
Chairperson,
yeah.
We have had 6 meetings already this year, and the minutes of those meetings are available. We can make them available to this committee.
How many times did you meet last year between June and December?
I think we've had more than 4 meetings, but my colleagues can comment that. But all the minutes of the meetings that we've had since last year are available, and we can make that available to the committee.
I think the point I'm making, we'll be happy to have them, is what becomes the framework under which you're meeting if you have no memorandum of understanding. You have had 10 meetings, but what guides those meetings? Or what do you do in those meetings? What do you discuss?
We do have the draft implementation protocol, Chairperson. We do have a draft business plan. We do have a draft MOU, which will be presented to the MEC of the province. The MEC wanted to be given time to familiarize themselves with those documents, and they will be presented to you next week.
All right. I check with you, Honourable Detroit Comrade Roy, are you done?
There's one more, because the report finds that the Housing Act has not been adhered to. That has given rise to a host of problems, which the Auditor General lists, I won't go through them, lists having 8 non-compliance instances arising from the fact that isn't a proper memorandum of understanding, and that the Housing Act has not been complied with. Why is that? Who is responsible for ensuring that compliance with the Housing Act? Who is responsible? And that person has seriously failed in his or her duties. What disciplinary measures have been taken for lack of ensuring compliance with the Housing Act?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the MOU attempted to state exactly what the 3 spheres of government should have done, but it didn't go far enough. The understanding in terms of how we were operating was quite clear. The province would be the developer of the project, the city would be implementing agent, and National would provide the necessary policies and support. That was clearly what the intention was. Province remained the developer of the project.
No. Talk to the question of the Act. Let's confine ourselves to that one.
And that's and I cannot see that, in terms of the intentions of the MOU, that it was in defiance of the Act. It was quite clear that province would be the developer, city would be the implementing agent, and national. In terms of the Act, that is exactly what is required of the 3 spheres of government.
Okay. Honourable Detroit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I went through this report, I wrote next to MOU, I wrote here, the root of the chaos. Now, clearly, after all these years, we don't have a memorandum of understanding. Now, we all know that the three spheres of government at that point were the same ruling party. And I'm not trying to play politics here, but it's a fact. And that, in that sense, it couldn't come up with a memorandum of understanding. Now we've got different parties in different spheres, and we hear that we're going to have a memorandum of understanding in 2 months' time. I can't see how you cannot draw this up quicker. I mean, how can you proceed without a memorandum of understanding? And I want to know, the question Mr. Anstey has asked has not been answered. Who was the genius that was responsible for the drawing up of the memorandum of understanding? I hope it's not the same genius that's going to do it this time. So who was this person or committee?
All right.
While they're consulting, I wanted a follow-up question.
Because you see, again, the Office of the DG are contradicting to some extent what the Auditor General's report says, because the Auditor General makes the finding that the Housing Act was not adhered to. Office of the DG are denying that. Office of the DG say that the roles and responsibilities were specific and quite clear. The Auditor General's report does not say that. I won't read the entire paragraph on page 6, where it says these roles and responsibilities were not certain at all. They were confused. But the response we're getting from them is no, everybody knew what they were doing. That is not the finding of the Auditor General, Chairperson, on those two accounts.
Let me start with the city of Cape Town, and then we'd want to hear. Because it does not look tidy that we ask a question and it's like you're starting to consult now about the issues. You are not sure who has the answers to what. It just says there was no adequate preparation whatsoever. Or it is this thing that politicians don't read documents, so we can just come there and give generalized responses and then get away with it.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to comment on the role of the city in the Inter-Gateway project since it was removed or in February 2006. The city has not been a part of the steering committee. The city's input in terms of that project is that the city has chaired the allocation committee. We were not part of the steering committee, but we had representation on a lower technical working committee, in other words, in terms of trying to organize aspects of cooperation, e.g. MIG funding and UNESCO working with other city departments. So we were not members of STEOCOM since the city was removed in February 2006. Thank you, sir.
Well, I'm not sure if you want to go back to did you withdraw or were you removed? Are you saying the city was removed?
Mr. Chair, our understanding was that, and I can only quote the mayor at the time, was that the city was removed because of certain disagreements. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Okay. DG, can we come back to the question that Detroit asked? Who drafted the MOU? And also what Ansley raised, the contravention of the Act. Are you still insisting that, as far as you're concerned, there was no contravention?
Just the comment on the MOU, and it's come up a number of times now, and I think it needs to be put in perspective. At the time, the agreement was framed by, the MOU was framed quite clearly from two sets of lessons, and of course defined by both the Constitution and the Housing Act. So there's no doubt about the definition. The definition was also defined by the Intergovernmental Relations Bill at the time. It wasn't an act. I was involved in that myself. I was acting DG, and those definitions were very clear. But they were also, as would be understood, both in the Constitution and in the IGR Bill. And if you'll note, the part that was dropped from the IGR Bill was the component that dealt with how do you structure an intergovernmental agreement. So those compatible components were not resolved in the IGR Act. Nonetheless, the bill was available and guided us in those decision-making processes with due consideration of how you manage cooperative governance on one hand, and on the other hand, respect the responsibilities as prescribed both in the Constitution and the Housing Act. That means different parts play different roles. So on the basis of that, lots of legal opinion from all three spheres of government, the legal divisions were involved. They may have even been involved of external advice. I am aware of that at the time. And they may have been the state law advisor in helping us define that. The problem was that it was an agreement to cooperate on a specific project. That had not happened before in housing in that formula. And that formula is quite convoluted, the process, but it worked. That means we get 2.4 million houses hitting the ground because ultimately the formula works. But let me tell you, it's a very difficult process. Now we're trying it in one project. So the process of the MOU was formulated with a lot of advice, and it was broad in order to resolve the details over time, because as an MOU it was only an agreement to cooperate and find the definitions and the procedural bridges that were necessary to make this project work. So that's really what it was. We couldn't define the procedural bridges. Partly that's what the AG's report helps us do. It says these procedural bridges cannot be undertaken because the following things. So that's on that answer. On the answer of the contraventions of those components, a classic example in this instance and the one that's raised repeatedly again in this report is social housing. Effectively, the policy was in place, but the new policy, there was a revision occurring, and the revision was consistent with the breaking new ground policy. That means we had to write everything in anticipation of an adoption. Then the policy is adopted by cabinet, and then you have to do revisions in what you've framed as a policy. And by the way, the social housing policy is an attempt, again, and quite successful in some centers, certainly in Johannesburg, less so in Cape Town, where three spheres have to collaborate. That means the way that the Act is written, partly based on this lesson at the time. We didn't have the lessons. We were just starting. So the social housing policy actually says that the three spheres have to collaborate because in sustainable human settlements, not housing, but even in the Housing Act, certain parts of the municipal, like land identification, hence you'll see it's 6.21 findings B, Roman numerals 3, identify and designating land for housing development, both in the Act and in social housing, is a responsibility for the local authority. Later on in this report, you will see elements of where housing has fallen down, hence the establishment of a housing development agency to try and bridge that gap of land identification in a difficult market, and certainly Cape Town's a difficult market. So the point about that and the point that the AG is making is you had to resolve those. And partly it's a kind of chicken and egg situation. Can you resolve the detail before you've tested it and operationalized it? So the MOU is a guide. And I hear members' concern about this, but it is a guide and it is not a defining document. It is only an agreement to cooperate.
Okay. Now that's fine. Although it does not mean that it should have contradictions. Like when you're talking roles and responsibilities, you say the city will be responsible for the business plan. But when you go to the institutional arrangement, it says the steering committee will be responsible for the business plan. I mean, there can be no justification for that kind of a contradiction. I want to give comment to Tobijan, and I would request members to maybe just pen down, and when we're done, we could come back to that so that we don't end up missing out on. I'll give you two. If it's a follow-up on what you ask, and from there, we'll hand over to you to focus on your focus area.
I'm sure it's a completely new. It's not a follow-up. It's not what you wanted me to do. Chair, looking at, we've been running in seconds throughout this morning. I would want to suggest that let the committee have in close meeting to determine whether we continue going forward, because we are wasting time here. From the beginning to where we are, no single answer was given. Can we have our own meeting just to look at how far have we gone and take a decision? Thanks, Chair. That's my proposal.
I think let us continue the meeting. I differentiate.
I think I made a request that can we go into a closed session.
No, I'm responding
upon the committee also.
you cannot just, you know, every now shut us down when we are seeing that we are not protesting. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I hear you, but I certainly would not want us to have start and stop, because we would have serious challenges in terms of how we proceed. With our meetings, and that such requests must not come very lightly. I think that's where I'm at. Let me check from other members. Are you responding to?
Chairperson, I want to concur with our colleague there, because I think not only for ourselves as a committee with the members of the Auditor General's office, but also I think the three spheres of government should take a walk, 5 minutes, breathe some fresh air, talk about things that they want to come and give us answers to here, so that this can become a constructive meeting. And you know, we do justice to this report, and we make recommendations and findings that are relevant to spending of money and relevant in terms of the PFMA. We haven't been asked the question, who's responsible for this project now? Who's driving it? What terms and conditions? How are you spending money? Under what prescripts, et cetera, et cetera? So I think maybe a comfort break. We call it a comfort break rather than anything else. But just to clear the heads, so I'll support the colleague.
All right. I'm just trying to look at the arrangements for us to engage. Is there any view to the contrary?
There's no contrary view.
I'm trying to find out in a very procedural way. Are you opposed to that?
Mr. Chairman, no, I think we could take a little break.
No, I wanted somebody who has a contrary view to the suggestion on the table, so that in the absence of that, we could then say, let's have that break.
Contrary to what the other honourable member said, I say that we proceed as long as we can. So even if we do not get answers, at least we get a lot of questions in. So then we save another meeting. Otherwise, it's going to go on and on and on.
Right. Is there a second to that approach?
Chair, I think what the member is saying is what we're supposed to discuss in that closed session and agree on the way forward. But we can't discuss it now.
All right. Can we please have a short break, and members of the committee of COBA, let's just have a little corner here and talk to the issue. Thank you very much, DG. You know that in much more than in any other, and of course I'm speaking without the necessary friends. We operate like that. Even when we talk in the house, people don't know we belong to different parties when we talk to our work. So we always synergize our approaches to issues. A DG of the National Department, as well as the Head of Department from the province and the City of Cape Town. We, and course, the Auditor General. Thank you very much for understanding to give us some time to retire. So we have done that, having tried to look at the proceedings that we've had so far. And it is the considered view of this committee, unanimous, that let us proceed in this fashion. One, there is a great deal of dissatisfaction amongst members with the way we are getting feedback from this side. There is clearly a lack of coherence in terms of information that is sought from this side. Clearly, the National Department is an insulated component out there, the provincial department as well as the municipality. And yet, this was a project that was undertaken by the 3 spheres of government. And we would very much expect that whenever there are responses they should represent the collective opposition of all involved. And we would want to get a sense that these responses represent the work that the 3 spheres have done. And I think that so far we are not getting that very, very clearly. And I think that very pertinent issues related to this report that we would want to see coming from your side, it's who takes responsibility, who is responsible, who made the decisions, and what measures have been taken thus far to correct the situation and actually to deal with those responsible for the deficiencies that have been identified. What intervention measures have been put in place to make sure that this project proceeds accordingly. Because we are talking about money, public funds that have been used in a way or in a manner that is completely unsatisfactory to us at the level of economy and efficiency. So we would not want to be given answers very lightly, because we ourselves take our responsibilities very seriously. And we are not convinced that any subsequent questions would yield responses that are materially different from what we've had. Let me say substantively different in terms of that lack of coherence and the sense of collective responsibility and the clear enunciation of what happened. We are very clear that in terms of what has happened, we are not looking for what has not happened. We are looking for what has happened, even if it's wrong, no matter how wrong it is. So we are not confusing answers we are not happy with answers that we feel do
not carry the necessary depth. And we think that the report does need to be reread by the officials, and a common approach to responding to the issues that might arise from it we arrived at. And on that basis, therefore, we feel that we cannot and should not continue with this hearing, but rather agree to start afresh on the 5th of August, hopefully in this very same place. And hoping that by then you would have found each other. And I must stress, DG, that it is not a decision we're taking lightly or arrive at lightly. Because last week we met with the SAPS management. We had to cut short our hearing. Because we had become worried that there was no depth and consistency in the responses that we're getting. And there was a growing sense that it appears we're going back the same route. And in effectively discharging our responsibilities, therefore, we felt it might not assist us to go on with the hearing in this fashion. So we're therefore saying, let's adjourn the hearing until the 5th of August. And then we will take it up from there. But I hope the issues that I enunciated, you would have noted them down and be able to put your heads together around these matters. I think that in matters where finances were involved, we certainly would want to have definitive answers. That's our main area of focus. Issues relating to policy and whatnot, the chairperson is here, the portfolio committee is here, they will deal with that with you. But in instances that involve the utilization of money, who and why Siberia was hired when it was position 6 and later it was realized they have no capacity, and how was that arrived at, and how that was changed, and how Tubelisha came into the picture, and all such related matters, I think would want very, very firm and clear answers. I would be very surprised if there is an official premise who, when you want documents, they take all the documents, they don't photocopy documents. So when one answers, it will be that all documents have been shipped to the Auditor General, we have nothing. I think we would want that when people come to Parliament to account to the people through their representatives, they need to take their responsibilities seriously and appreciate that they have an administrative responsibility to our people. And whatever we do, we must be able to account for that and clearly demonstrate that we're doing everything in the interest of our people and not in our own interest. So, DG, we would want to leave it at that. And say, let's meet on the 5th of August and then let's have a different discussion than what we've had now.
We also have a caucus, and we felt that we'll have to work closely to try to clarify some of those issues that members have raised, and want to assure you that there will be coherency in our responses when we come before you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Comrade Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, I think we as the portfolio committee we appreciate the invitation by the SCOPA, and we have been here observing the proceedings. We have also mastered everything that has been transpired, and I think from now we are going to make sure that the department, when they come on the 5th of August, we are going to monitor them that they have done their homework properly, because we need to ensure that they respect the parliament. So when they come here, they must know what are they going to see as expected. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, comrade. Well, the meeting stands adjourned until the 5th of August.